Hey everyone, I'm Sam.
And I'm Sean.
And this is Key to the Case. Welcome back. Thank you all for joining us today. And we want to give a special thank you to our listener, Sierra, for suggesting today's case. We have a little announcement to make. We are changing our podcast cover art. We like our art now, but now that we're a little more than a year into the podcast, we have a bit of a different vision in mind. And my sister, who's an artist, actually created this new cover art, and we're super excited about it. Her name is Paige Leadom. That's L-E-D-O-M. And she's an artist full-time. So if you want to check out her work, her website is pageleadomstudio.com. And I'll also have it linked in the show notes, but she has originals and prints of her originals on her website right now. So definitely check it out and keep an eye out for new cover art in the next couple of weeks. We don't want to throw anyone off with this cover art change, which is why we're giving you a heads up.
Yeah, definitely check out her website. She does really cool work. I think we have like somewhere between 8 to 10 pieces of her artwork hanging up in our house because we do genuinely love it so much.
Yes, her art is all over our house because, as Sean said, we genuinely love it. All right, let's get into today's case. Lorraine Pullen Lynn, who went by Lori, was 60 years old at the time of her death in 2017. Lori grew up in the Liberty Township area north of Youngstown, Ohio, with three sisters and one brother. One of Lori's older sisters, Diane, described her as an independent person who loved to joke around. Lori graduated from Liberty High School in 1975, and after high school, she worked as a bookkeeper, and she later attended Youngstown State University, where she studied accounting. But Lori's life went down a different path when she learned she was pregnant with her first daughter, who she and her partner, Tim, named Karen. Now, I said she went down a different path because around that time, she stopped studying accounting and she began working as a heavy machine operator. Quite a difference there, right? But Lori had family members who worked in similar fields, and she was looking for a steady income to support her first child. Lori was very handy, capable, and a do-it-yourself kind of person. So although she entered a male-dominated industry, it wasn't that surprising to those who knew her. According to Lori's family via the website they created about her case, her work was extremely hard and physical. She operated heavy equipment to dig holes and ditches, grate roads, install drainage systems, and occasionally she handled hazardous materials on certain work sites. Lori was great at her job, even featured in an article about women breaking the glass ceiling. There were pictures of her working and information about her alongside other women in male-dominated fields. Lori's coworkers enjoyed working with her and described her as cheerful. And they also shared that Lori was highly skilled in her field and she didn't need supervision to be successful.
Yeah, that's really impressive that that's the career path she chose to pivot to once she found out she was going to be having a baby. And it's especially impressive considering it was in the 70s and 80s, right? So I'd imagine back then it was extremely male dominated in that industry because I work in, you know, kind of a construction related field. And today, obviously, it's still extremely male dominated. So yeah, just really impressive that she chose that path. And it sounded like she was excelling at it.
Oh, she definitely did. That's something pretty much anyone who knew Lori, they always mention how good she was at her job. And she was pretty dedicated to it as well. 7 years after Lori and Tim had their first daughter, Karen, they had their second daughter, Samantha. When Samantha reflects on her childhood now, she said that she didn't necessarily know how hard her mom was working for her and her sister's sake, and she also acknowledged how Lori would still show up after a long day of work for any activities, sporting events, things of that nature. Corinne has described her mom as her best friend and the backbone of the family. In the early 2000s, after 20 or so years of marriage, Lori and Tim divorced. But Lori later entered a relationship with a man named Mark, who she met when they both worked for a highway construction company. Lori and Mark were engaged at the time of her death in 2017. After more than 30 years of hard work, Lori retired in 2016. She was looking forward to traveling more and spending more time with her family, especially her adult daughters and their children, her grandchildren. On Tuesday, August 1st, 2017, Lori left her Ravenna, Ohio home in her newly purchased 2017 Nissan Pathfinder. Lori was headed to her mom's house in Girard, Ohio. She needed to take her mom to the Trumbull County Courthouse because Lori's father, her mom's husband, passed away the year before in 2016. And Lori helped her mom with a lot of paperwork and settling of the estate. And on this specific day, she was taking her mom to the courthouse to file property records to transfer what was previously in her dad's name to her mom's name. Lori's mom suffered from dementia, but I'm not sure exactly when she started exhibiting symptoms. In other words, I don't know her exact state at that time. During the 45-minute drive from Ravenna to Girard, Lori attempted to call her mom several times, but those calls went unanswered. When Lori arrived midday, she pulled into the somewhat long driveway and parked in front of her mom's house. Lori walked to her mom's front door and knocked, but received no answer. After waiting a few moments, she went inside with her key and found that her mom was not home. She then spent several minutes inside, and then Lori got back in her car and drove off. And this is really the beginning of this entire mystery. But before we get into that, I want to explain the layout of Lori's mom's property. So her home was off Shannon Road, and it's a pretty suburban area with plenty of houses around, but there's definitely space between the homes, and most of the houses in the area, you can see them from the road, but Lori's mom's house sits farther back. You can't see it from the road, and she had almost 40 acres of land or 16 hectares. When you pull into the driveway, you drive for about 300 feet or 91 meters before you reach the house. Then, if you were to drive about another 100 or so feet or 30 meters, that would take you to a barn. And then there are two ponds on the property close to the barn and not far from the house. Then beyond the ponds, it's just a wooded area, and that wooded area backs up to State Route 11. I hope that helped create a visual in your mind, but we will have helpful images of the area on our Instagram, Key to the Case podcast. I want to make it clear that where Lori's mom's house was, I don't think other homes could see, or if you were at another home, I don't think you'd be able to see her house. Notably, Lori's brother Chip and her ex-husband, the father of her children, Tim, both have houses on the same road as Lori's mom. They are very close by. It would take a minute probably to drive from the mom's house to their homes, and their homes are right next door to each other. So they're all in the same vicinity.
So that must mean Tim kept the house in their divorce and he still lives over there by Lori's mom.
Yes, which I thought was so interesting that he would have stayed in the house, but I don't think it plays into this case really.
So do we know why Lori's mom wasn't home? Was there a specific reason? Was she just out running errands, or do we know?
I had the same question, and it actually took me a while to find the answer to this. I kept wondering, why was she not home? Where was she? But according to Lori's daughter, Samantha, Lori's mom, she was at the grocery store with Chip's wife. Samantha, who has been instrumental in her mom's case, did a good job explaining how everyone became aware that Lori was missing on the Murder in My Family podcast. Lori's fiance, Mark, who she lived with, arrived home from work in the evening, and he found Lori's to-do list, which included the word mom. So he figured she went to her mom's house And we know she did. So her not being home was not concerning until it got later into the night, kind of around 11 or 12. That's when he started to worry. Mark called Lori's family, including her mom, to see if anyone knew where she was. The first person to check Lori's mom's property for Lori was her grandson. So this was her older daughter's son. And he went there in the wee hours of the morning. He drove out to check if Lori's car was there. He pulled in the driveway, didn't see Lori's car, and left. Lori's daughter, Samantha, got in touch with her dad, Tim, Lori's ex-husband, to see if he could check for her since he lived right there and she was on her way from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, where she lived, to Girard. And that drive takes about an hour and 20 minutes. Tim said he would wait until the sun began to come up so as not to freak out Lori's mom. And that was not long after they talked on the phone. When Tim got to the property, he found Lori's Nissan Pathfinder parked on an old burn or trash pile behind the barn that, as I said earlier, was 100-ish feet away from Lori's mom's home.
So it must have been pretty difficult to find if Lori's grandson said he pulled up and couldn't find her car or said it wasn't parked in the driveway.
Yes, he did not see her car because it was behind the barn and it was not visible from Lori's mom's house, which is where he was checking.
Right. Like, why would he check over there?
Exactly. Yeah. There was no reason to believe Lori's vehicle would be anywhere other than in front of her mom's home. When Tim looked in the car, he noticed Lori's purse and keys were inside the vehicle on the front seat. So he figured she must be on the property somewhere because she wouldn't have left her purse there. He also noticed Lori's car was covered in dew, which indicated that it had likely been there overnight. So going back to what you just said, that also kind of rules out that maybe her car wasn't there when her grandson went to check and, you know, she parked there later. We know it was probably there overnight. While Tim was checking out the car, Chip, Lori's brother who lived nearby, showed up. Chip, who was familiar with his mom's property and what was on it, noticed that a small farm tractor that he normally left adjacent to a storage shed that was near the barn was missing. Now, this tractor has an attachment called a brush hog or a rotary cutter, and this gets attached to the back of the tractor so that when you're riding it, it will cut the grass behind you. Chip and Tim noticed a clear path of cut grass, so they followed the trail and it took them to the upper pond. It was Chip who discovered the tractor partially submerged in the water up to about the steering wheel, and Lori was in the tractor, completely unresponsive. The front part of the tractor was angled downward at about a 45 degree angle, but from here, Tim and Chip had different memories of how Lori's body was positioned. Tim actually got into the pond to get to Lori, but according to Tim, Chip told him not to touch anything so as not to disturb anything. Tim, who again got in the water, described Lori's position this way. He said the top part of her body was slumped over the steering wheel, partially submerged in water, but her legs were completely visible and positioned behind her. When interviewed later, Chip reported that she was lying fully on the brush hog, which keep in mind is behind the tractor, facing down with her face on the drive shaft. And the drive shaft was understood to be the power takeoff that transmits power from the tractor to the cutter. It's quite a different description. And I found one good image of the scene and the attachment. The brush hog was out of the water. Just thinking about this logically, I will say it's harder to imagine Lori ending up in the position that Chip described than what Tim described. But Tim and Chip weren't the only ones who saw Lori and the tractor because they called 911 after they made the discovery.
How are their descriptions of where they found her body so different? Those are completely different parts of the tractor.
I thought it was confusing too. And those statements came not too long after Lori was found. And we'll get to this part later, but the family involved a forensic engineer. And part of what that forensic engineer did was talk to Tim and Chip about what they saw. And Tim actually went back out to the pond with this forensic engineer and showed him how he found Lori, kind of the positioning and everything. And he felt confident when he was presented with this fact that, you know, Chip was giving a little bit of a, not a little bit, but quite a different description. Tim felt confident that his version was the correct one, especially because he went back out to the scene and showed him how Lori was positioned and was able to revisualize it. And Chip did not go back out to the scene, even though he lived right there. I believe this was all shared over the phone. So yes, it is confusing, but anytime you read about this case, you will hear the description that Tim gave. I can't find the description that Chip gave really anywhere else other than that one report from the forensic engineer. So two officers with the Liberty Police Department arrived on the scene and found that Lori was deceased. The police report has been made publicly available by Lori's daughter, and although it's a pretty sparse report, they documented that it appeared Lori was cutting the grass when the tractor entered the pond. The officers classified Lori's case as a non-criminal incident. Photos were taken of the scene, and like I just said, when this case is discussed now, the description of how Lori was found is more aligned with how Tim described the scene, but we know they have photos, so there shouldn't be any question of that detail because it's not like Tim and Chip moved Lori's body after they found her. They left her where she was.
Has anyone re-questioned Chip on the answer he gave? Have him expound upon it a little bit? Because that obviously that's not where her body was found. He gave a pretty specific answer too.
I don't know if the police have addressed that specific discrepancy, and I did have to reread it so many times to make sure I was understanding that he did indicate, at least to the forensic engineer, that Lori was on the brush hog, not in the seat of the tractor, and that is what the report says. So again, I don't know if the police have questioned him about this discrepancy, but they have talked with Chip over the years. The police report details that the Trumbull County Coroner's Office was contacted and they sent transportation for Lori so she could be taken to the coroner's office for an autopsy. The report indicates the case was closed on the same day Lori was found before an autopsy was completed. This shows how confident they were that this was an accident based on little evidence. Although the police captain at the time denied that they closed the case, or he says that it was closed, but it was still being investigated. The information I could find was conflicting regarding this specific detail, but the report would indicate that it was closed the same day that it occurred.
So did they give a cause of death since they were so confident that it was an accident?
So, good question. You would think they could at least wait until the autopsy was completed because if Lori's death truly was a tragic accident, there is a certain set of injuries she should have sustained based on her body's position in the tractor. Police theorized that she might have been hit in the head by a tree branch while on the tractor, which rendered her unconscious and caused her to accidentally drive into the pond and drown. Although it's been pointed out that the nearest tree branch was about 30 feet away from the pond, she would have hit the tree branch and then continued to ride for 30 feet until she entered the pond. If that is what happened, then the autopsy results should align with that. Lori's daughter, Samantha, learned that when the police called the coroner, they told him he didn't need to come out to the scene because it looked like an accident. Without much of an investigation, many viewed this as a premature decision. When Lori's daughters learned of the news of their mom's death, they were devastated, but they were also confused once they learned of how she was found and how the police surmised that it was a farm accident. By the time Samantha arrived, law enforcement was already leaving the scene. Lori was the last person you'd expect to get into an accident like this because she had 30 plus years of experience operating heavy machinery. In fact, a backhoe was Lori's favorite machine to operate. And a backhoe and tractor are obviously different. They serve different purposes, but they're both heavy equipment. So how could Lori go 30 plus years without an accident, as far as I could find, to getting into an accident while mowing her mom's yard? And that raised another question for Lori's daughter. Why would she have been cutting the grass in the first place? Lori was there to take her mom to the courthouse, not to mow, and it's not like she was responsible for mowing her mom's yard.
That was one question I had was, did Lori typically come out and mow the grass? I would assume it would have been Chip or Tim since they, you know, live right there. That was something I was wondering if that was a task that she regularly did.
I mean, I can't say with certainty that Lori never mowed her mom's yard, but no, my understanding is that this was not her responsibility, not something she did with any sort of frequency. So it's not like it made sense to her family. Oh, she couldn't find her mom, so she decided to mow the lawn, right? That didn't make sense. They were also disturbed by the location of Lori's vehicle. They couldn't understand why she would park her newly purchased car that she had just washed that day on top of a spot her father used to use to burn construction scraps. Although her father was no longer alive at that time, there were still nails, broken glass, and other rough materials on the ground. Of all places on the property, why park there? So it appeared Lori just parked right on top of all of that. And frankly, there's no logical reason for that other than that she wanted to park closer to where the tractor was, but she still could have parked on the driveway and have been a very short distance away from the tractor. That was her intent. From what I could find, no one had ever seen Lori park in that spot. Little did the police know, there were surveillance cameras on Lori's mom's property. No one informed them of this until Samantha did, and they evidently didn't inquire about cameras when they were on the scene because Chip knew there were cameras on the property since he was the one who had them installed. The police didn't ask him, and he didn't mention it. The cameras were affixed to Lori's mom's house. So the timeline of this case started with me explaining how when Lori arrived at her mom's house, she parked in front of her house, got out, went inside the house. And when she was unable to find her mom, she got back in her car and drove off. Well, we know this because of the camera footage. No one knows where Lori went when she left, or if anyone knows where she went, they have not come forward. But we know Lori's vehicle was gone for about 45 minutes before it returned to her mom's house. And what was captured on the various cameras remains a bothersome detail to much of Lori's family. You would think if Lori drove back to her mom's house from wherever she was and she parked her car behind the barn, she would have driven straight down the driveway until she got to the barn and she would have taken a left off the driveway and parked her car. That would be the most direct and normal route. However, that is not what happened. And this is where having the visual of the property helps, but I'll do my best to explain it. So Lori's Nissan Pathfinder is just barely caught on camera. Where the cameras are positioned, you can't see the front of the driveway or the entrance of the driveway. So we don't know which direction Lori's vehicle came from, but it can just barely be seen on the driveway and then veering left into the grass once the vehicle got closer to the house. The vehicle then goes through the grass just to park behind the barn. Why take this circuitous route when you could just drive down the driveway and park behind the barn? The police have since obtained this footage, but it made certain family members of Lori suspicious. Her daughter, Samantha, has been vocal that it appears the driver knew about the cameras on the property and was attempting to avoid them because if the driver had taken the more direct route, they would have been visible on the cameras. We don't know if Lori drove her vehicle or if someone else did, but Samantha has pointed out that there was a limited number of people who knew where the cameras were positioned, just a few close family members. With the police considering Lori's death an accident and the coroner classifying her death as under investigation, Lori's family, who was incredibly suspicious of her death and made their suspicions known, brought other resources in early on to conduct an investigation. And when I say Lori's family, I'm mainly speaking about Lori's sister, Diane, and her two daughters, Samantha and Corinne, as well as Mark, Lori's fiance. But I'm not really sure about the stance from the rest of the family, other than Chip, Lori's brother, who found her with Lori's ex-husband, which we'll get into a little bit later. Lori's family hired a retired FBI agent as a private investigator, as well as a forensic engineer, as I mentioned earlier. The private investigator looked into the case to see what he could dig up, while the forensic engineer had two main objectives, according to his report. One, determine if the tractor was defective and contributed to Lori's death, and two, determine the source of any mechanical damage if found. These are great questions to explore because with Lori's level of experience operating heavy machinery, it almost feels as though something had to be wrong with the tractor for her to get into an accident like this. The tractor was old. It was manufactured in 1978. It wasn't out of the question that something could be wrong with it, even though prior to Lori's death, it was frequently used. And although there'd been some work done on it in the past, there was no indication that it was malfunctioning at that time. When the professional engineer, Thomas Baker, arrived on the scene on August 6th, just 4 days after Lori was found, the tractor was still in its original position. Thomas's report indicates the gear shift was in neutral, the speed selector was set to high, and the throttle was set to half speed. The key switch was in the run position. I immediately thought it was strange that the gear shift would be in a neutral position because I was thinking, why would Lori ride in neutral? But the report does specify that the gear selector was easily moved. So it's possible that the accident itself or even the removal of Lori's body caused the selector to be in the neutral position. So it doesn't tell us much. The report is fairly detailed and it outlines all of the mechanical checks that were completed. And one point of interest I had was the brakes. Were they working properly? And the report concluded that there was nothing wrong with the brakes. The engine was not started because of the submersion in the water, but otherwise they found that the tractor was mechanically sound and they found no defects that would have prevented a driver from stopping or maneuvering the tractor. It can be ruled out that a malfunction or mechanical issue with the tractor led to an accident that caused Lori's death. This further strengthened Lori's family's theory that this was not an accident.
So that's good, I suppose, that the tractor has been checked out and is mechanically sound. Although that doesn't rule out the possibility that her head did hit a low-hanging branch, right? Like she could have hit her head on a branch and then it could have knocked her unconscious and she could have continued to drive straight into the pond. Another, I think you said 30 or so feet.
Right.
And after she drove into the pond, maybe her body shifted and hit the gear selector into neutral.
Yes, that is still a possibility. And that's why the autopsy is so important here. And we'll get to that in just a moment. We haven't talked about it yet, really, because it took months to get a kind of a determination from the autopsy. So for months after Lori's death, her family constantly asked the police for new information about how the case was going because they didn't know that Lori's case was apparently closed the same day that it was opened. They learned that later and they were angry about it. I mean, how do you close a case like this within a few hours? The tractor wasn't processed for evidence. Lori's car wasn't processed for evidence, although it later was forensically examined. An autopsy hadn't been conducted. Camera footage hadn't been reviewed. A minimal number of interviews were conducted. So making that decision on the same day is quite baffling. I said earlier how the Trumbull County Coroner's Office classified Lori's death as under investigation. Samantha has pointed out that the media and what little coverage this case has gotten has incorrectly stated or insinuated that the coroner ruled the manner of death as accidental, but she has clarified that it was considered under investigation for about 6 to 7 months until early 2018, when the coroner ruled the manner of death as homicide. The coroner ruled the cause of death as homicidal violence at the hands of another. So it's broad, but it's possible there were multiple injuries that made it difficult to tell. I read that there was bruising on Lori's neck, but Lori's sister, Diane, spoke with the coroner, and according to her, he believed Lori likely died of asphyxiation. The media has reported that Lori was likely beaten and strangled, so we don't know with certainty how Lori died. There was no water in Lori's lungs either. So that's important to note, considering when she was found, her head was underwater. Additionally, the toxicology reports came back clean. There was nothing of note in her system. Sadly, the coroner who made this ruling died just a couple of months later. So this was a huge development, and it indicated that Lori's body was placed on the tractor in order to stage an accident. And just think about that. Whose brain even comes up with a scenario like that? I think about the steps they had to take to do this, right? Especially if they were the one who drove Lori's vehicle. Was Lori in the back of the car when it was seen, barely seen on camera, driving through the grass to then park behind the barn? We don't know who got out of the car. But then someone would have had to take this tractor. They had to know where the keys were to start it. Then they would have had to carry Lori's body to the position that they put the tractor in and kind of set her up like that. I mean, it's pretty involved if you think about it. Now, that may not be exactly how it played out, but something like that had to go down with this being a homicide. I suppose the homicide could have occurred on Lori's mom's property somewhere, and she was not taken in the vehicle. So definitely a few possibilities here.
Okay, so tree branch officially ruled out, and any sort of accident. But the police feel pretty silly after seeing the autopsy come out by being so quick to say that it was an accident.
Yeah, and we'll get into that a little bit more later. I think they did try to justify the way they treated the case in the beginning. I think some people acknowledge that they made mistakes. Others seem to kind of double down on their decision. Going back to the camera footage for a moment, it's highly probable that someone else drove her vehicle, right, to that final location. And if that is the case, that person had to then leave the property after staging the tractor scene, and they avoided cameras when they left too. So again, with few people knowing exactly where those cameras were positioned, the offender either got extremely lucky to not be caught on camera, or they knew where the cameras were. Almost 2 years after Lori's death in 2019, her daughters Samantha and Corinne filed a federal lawsuit against two township trustees and members of the Liberty Police Department, including Tony Millaro, who was a police captain at the time of Lori's murder. And he was on the receiving end of a lot of frustration from Lori's family. And there was even an internal investigation into him that found he did not perform the investigation into Lori's death in accordance with the police department's standards and practices. The lawsuit claimed that Lori's death investigation was inadequate It violated her due process rights and marred any hope of justice for the family. The lawsuit was terminated with the judge siding with defendants. The judge said, the factual allegations in the claim, quote, must be enough to raise a right to relief above the speculative level. In other words, claims set forth in a complaint must be plausible rather than conceivable, end quote. The judge went on to say, quote, Lorraine Lynn's civil rights terminated at her death. Plaintiffs Corinne Lynn and Samantha Lynn must establish a deprivation of their own rights under the Constitution or laws of the United States. Samantha and Corinne just didn't have quite enough information to support their specific claims. But back to the investigation. We still have the question of where did Lori go when she left her mom's house? Samantha has made it clear that she thinks it's likely that her mom would go to a family member's home who lived nearby to check if her mom is there. Now, Tim, her ex-husband, who lived right by her mom, was visiting the city his daughters lived in, Pittsburgh. So if she went to Tim's house, he wouldn't have been there. That leaves her brother, Chip. Samantha has made it clear that she and her sister do not have a relationship with Chip, and they didn't have one when Lori died. Samantha shared on the Murder in My Family podcast that Chip tortured her and her sister when they were kids. She told a story about how when she was a kid, Chip paid his own stepson and another neighborhood kid to beat her up. Samantha also said he dropped Corinne into rose thorn bushes when she was a kid. So Samantha is quite open about how she never had a good perception of Chip. And she believes that the police didn't take her seriously because of that. I think it's important to explain their relationship, but there's more to it. Lori and Chip had a history of disputes, according to family members, typically related to money. Lori's mom owned several rental properties. And again, according to the Murder in My Family podcast interview, Lori believed one of her siblings, I think we can presume who, was pocketing rent that was being paid in cash. So it sounded like the siblings managed these rental properties for their mom. In the spring of 2017, the same year Lori died, Lori planned to hire a property management company to handle the properties. Samantha said this deeply angered Chip. Generally, Samantha believes the motive behind Lori's death was financial in nature. Could Lori have been getting in the way of someone else's financial benefit? When Chip has been asked about Lori's homicide, he hasn't said much, but he has expressed shock that someone would want to murder Lori since, according to him, she had no enemies. About a month after Lori's death, the tractor on which she was found was scrapped for about $500 by Chip. I personally would not want to get rid of the tractor since it wasn't processed for evidence and could be in the future. So by scrapping it so quickly, within a month, that possibility was taken away. But the tractor technically belonged to Lori and Chip's mom, so if anyone were to get rid of it, you'd think it should have been her. Also, just weeks after Lori was murdered, the trash site where her car was parked was cleaned. Apparently, this trash had been there for decades, never cleaned, but the topsoil was cleaned and larger pieces of trash were moved to the property line. Similarly to the tractor, could the soil potentially have contained evidence that someone wanted to remove?
Has Chip ever been named a suspect in this case?
No. No one has been named a suspect in this case by the police. I don't know if they consider anyone a suspect privately or among the detectives, but yeah, no one has been named a suspect. Lori's daughters created a website to gather information about their mom's case called Who Killed Lori Lynn? And there were helpful details on this website. And one detail I found that I didn't see mentioned anywhere else was that Chip's wife was spotted on the cameras on Lori's mom's property waving toward the field around 2 p.m. on the day Lori went to her mom's house. According to the website, Kim, who is Chip's wife, claimed she didn't see Lori that day and she was waving at a cat. Take that for what it is, but if it's true, it's certainly eyebrow raising. 3 News out of Cleveland, Ohio did a segment on Lori's case in November 2020. And in it, they spoke with Samantha and briefly with Chip. Then they filmed and shared Samantha and Chip arguing. He said he hasn't been able to grieve because of the allegations. Chip admitted he and Lori fought over money in the past, but he said he was elsewhere on the day she died. And that is such a vital piece. If Chip could prove that he was nowhere near his mom's house when Lori was found, or when it's believed Lori was placed there, that would be helpful. But I'm not sure what his alibi is for the day. Samantha has been bothered that Chip has refused to take a polygraph and hired a defense attorney. In that clip from 3 News, he said he would consider undergoing a polygraph. But I will say, with the accusations that have been out there, whether Chip had anything to do with it or not, I'm not surprised by his decision to not take a polygraph and to hire a defense attorney. But I think because Tim and Mark both took polygraphs and passed, it bothers Samantha that Chip won't.
I will say, if Chip did have anything to do with this, and obviously we don't know if he did or not, but if he did, it would be pretty bold to set up that whole crime scene essentially less than a mile down the road from his house, from where he lived, on his mom's property.
To play devil's advocate, though, wouldn't he be one of the only people who would feel comfortable doing that on her property?
Yeah, sure. But it's just such a close vicinity to where he lives.
Yeah, and I shouldn't say he would feel comfortable placing her body there. I just mean he would feel comfortable being on Lori's mom's property and potentially operating the tractor or whatever it may be. So many questions exist in this case, but one of the biggest questions I have is, where was Lori's cell phone during that 45-minute period when we don't know where she was? I certainly think cell phone location data could be useful in this case. And despite the investigation being bungled in the beginning, I don't think obtaining cell phone location data would have been out of the question 6 to 7 months after Lori's death, when it seemed like the true investigation began. I have to imagine the detective on the case now looked into this data. Unfortunately, there's not much physical evidence to work with. So cell phone data, witnesses, you know, whatever they can glean from camera footage, those kinds of details will be most helpful, unless there's something I don't know. And Lori's family has been pretty happy with the current investigator or detective on Lori's case. His name is Ray Buhala. He's taken a fresh approach to investigating her case as a homicide. Although this case got off to quite a rough start, I think it could still be solved. So if you have information related to the murder of Lori Lynn, you can contact the Liberty Police at 330-539-9848, or you can submit a tip anonymously at whokilledlorilynn.com. There is a $20,000 reward available for information leading to the arrest and conviction of Lori's killer. That is all for now, but we will be back next week with a new case. Bye.
Bye.